to more schools. This fund will enable field trips, artist residencies, and other experiences the schools choose through a grants program, and provide more arts in schools grants, such as this mural created by the Emerson School in Northwest Portland in collaboration with students, staff, and parents of Emerson School and members of the Pearl District Neighborhood Association and artist Mo Fee. And now I'll turn it to Lena.
As you know, RAC was a major partner with you and the Creative Advocacy Network in passing the Arts and Education and Access Income Tax, which will result in millions more for teachers, grants, and other arts organization and education services. Our commitment is to continue leveraging all public investments through strong partnerships with the private sector. We're also working with to renew the Oregon Cultural Trust Tax Credit, one of the most innovative arts funding mechanisms in the country. Several dozen advocates, including many of the people in this room, traveled to Salem last month as part of the Arts Advocacy Day, meeting with legislators to help them understand why it's so important to sustain this critical funding source. Our workplace giving program is called Work for Art, and it raised $823,000 last year, including the city's $200,000 matching fund and donations from more than 2,000 individuals. 100% of the money we raise goes back into the community as grants. Donors who give $60 more or more receive an arts card that gives them access to 2-for-1 tickets at hundreds of arts events throughout the year. This is a really good benefit. Last fall was a pretty tough fundraising environment. We anticipate that Work for Art will be down slightly by 5% overall by the time our campaign ends next month. But we are still getting a great response in more than 72 workplaces around the Portland area, including KeyBank, OHSU, The Standard, and Northwest Natural. Portland General Electric is one of our top campaigns every year, and last fall, 239 PGE employees helped us raise $83,376. 90 city employees participated this year for a total of $13,655, including some of you and your staffs, and we thank you. Burgerville continues to be an amazing partner. 410 employees donated to Work for Art this year, raising a total of $37,685. On top of that, the company's Feed the Arts promotion on March 21st raised an additional $15,000 for the campaign. And you'll get to hear more from CEO Jeff Harvey in just a few minutes.
Now I'd like to talk about our grants program. The majority of the city's allocation goes directly to our grants program. This chart illustrates both the city's investment in grants and funds leverage from Work for Art, the state, and the counties. Ongoing annual operating support, as I mentioned earlier, supports 44 of the largest organizations, including the majors like the Portland Art Museum, the Symphony, Portland Center Stage, and the Ballet, but also a very diverse range from Miracle Theater, here performing a bilingual celebration of Day of the Dead, the Children's Healing Art Project, or CHAP, Whitebird Dance, presenting Akram Khan Company, and so many dance companies from all over the U.S. and around the globe. Oregon Children's Theater, reaching many, many thousands of children and families every year with diverse offerings. And operating support is vital and will grow with the new Arts Fund, but these organizations still have to raise 95% of their budgets through ticket sales and contributions. Project grants are our most diverse grants program, supports a wide variety of small organizations and artists, individual artists. Anita Menon's Midsummer Night's Dream uses various styles of dance and music, including traditional Indian dance, but also hip-hop and ballet. Now, there's a combination for you. A visual artist, Horatio Hongyan Law, partnered with Planned Parenthood, Sisters of the Road, and Place Gallery to explore the notions of social currency and shifting socio-political situations in contemporary society. Inclusive Arts Vibe, a project run by Oregon Cultural Access, is a dance group that infuses integrated dance with underlying philosophy of disability culture and pride. These are just a few of the examples of how artists and organizations partner to help bring diverse people and cultures together. Our smallest grants are professional development, which help artists and organizations become more effective and thrive. A REC grant helped Free Arts Northwest develop marketing and fundraising materials as well as an outreach plan to increase visibility, and an 8-year-old helped design the logo. Artist Habiba used her grant to travel to Ghana to learn and record traditional storytelling techniques and to share these with children and storytellers here in Portland. Operating an emergency grants represents about a 6-year-old program which was with funds directed to us by City Council for opportunities and emergencies that organizations could not plan or budget for in their annual planning and budgeting process. An example of an emergency grant, with very little warning, African dance troupe Kukutanan needed buses to transport dancers from school to a new rehearsal space, and most parents were not able to provide transportation. So this grant was a vital bridge to making that change. And then Kalakendra was awarded grant funds for Samalan Spirit of Krishna, a unique classical music collaboration that promoted and enhanced the various performing arts of the Indian subcontinent. Every year, RAC recognizes excellent and long-term achievement through an artist fellowship. Last year, RAC's fellow in media arts was Larry Johnson. Larry used his fellowships to create a personal documentary telling his story as soldier and entertainer in Vietnam using 1972 archival footage plus modern-day imagery resulting from a trip to Vietnam during peacetime. All fellows engage the Portland community in some way, and I promise to let you know when you'll be able to see Larry's finished film. In summary, in 2012, we awarded approximately $3.3 million in grants benefiting 137 individual artists, 7 schools, and 143 nonprofits. It takes 3 staff and some 70 volunteers to do this work. In fiscal year 12-13, in line with our equity initiative, we made sure that 33% of all panelists were people of color. And that's a good segue into Lena's next section.
A topic I love to discuss, equity and outreach. As you know, RAC remains an enthusiastic partner in our combined efforts to ensure that all Portland residents have equal access to city services, including arts and culture. And we appreciate your tremendous leadership in this area, especially Commissioner Fritz, as well as Dante James and the City's Office of Equity and Human Rights. Over the past 2 years, RAC has redoubled our efforts to serve communities of color, people with disabilities, and other underserved communities. Our staff and our board are more than a third of people of color and are now working with arts organizations to develop strategies for increasing access for every Portland resident. People of color, starting with me at the helm as chair. This past year, arts organizations have been measuring who they serve and where. To help them with this work, RAC has convened several forums and created an online toolkit. At rac.org/equity, you will find a variety of resources, including our own plan for achieving the goal of equity and inclusion for all. For many years, RAC has offered workshops to help artists become more successful in their careers, covering such topics as how to write a grant, understanding contracts, and copyright issues. Now these workshops take place not only downtown, but in neighborhoods throughout the city. And some of our workshops are especially targeted for communities of color, including this workshop led by Renee Mitchell, Empowering Women Artists of Color to Develop Strong Grant Proposals. In partnership with the amazing arts guru, George Thorne, we also provide technical assistance for arts organizations, including a growing number of emerging culturally specific organizations. This year, we're trying something new. We carved out some resources in order to provide more arts-related services within and between communities of color. Last December, for example, we partnered with the Native American Youth Family Center to produce a marketplace and workshops for Native American artists and vendors. Arts organizations are making their services more accessible than ever before. The Arts for All program is a fantastic example. Low-income Oregonians qualifying for food stamps can buy tickets to an amazing variety of arts events for only $5 each. Portland Opera participates in Arts for All. They also have an amazing outreach program called Opera to Go that brings opera into the classroom, serving 5,000 students throughout the city and 18,000 children across the state. Here at RAC, we are finding that our outreach efforts are resulting in more proposals from communities of color, and we are funding more culturally specific projects as a result. Starting next year, the Arts Education and Access Fund will help us fund even more programs that reach more Portland residents, including underserved neighborhoods and rapidly growing communities of color. Eloise?
The public art program is primarily funded by the 2% for art set aside, shown in red here. In addition, we earn income for public art maintenance, consulting with communities here in the region and around the country to establish or further their public art programs, about $446,000 this year. Also, the city provided about $113,000 for community-based efforts like the murals program, the Visual Chronicle, and the Portland Building installation space. This has been a big year and continues to be for public art because of the Eastside Streetcar primarily. Inversion Plus Minus by Lead Pencil Studio, which I'm sure you've all seen, and I hope you're watching the gradual installation of the other half of it, is a bold and poetic visual interpretation of past industrial structures once so prevalent on the East Side. And any day now, literally the pieces arrived yesterday, you will see Jorge Pardo's dramatic and functional new streetcar shelter just up the hill from the Broadway Bridge. At the opposite end of the Percent for Art spectrum is a multi-artist residency housed at Bud Clark Commons. BCCTV, a hands-on video and production collaboration, is available for free to anyone who has been or is currently experiencing homelessness. And a couple of the people in this residency have actually gone on to do some work with Northwest Film Center. The Tram Tower has a new look. Artist Anna Valentina Merch designed a dramatic and seasonal lighting scheme for the iconic tram in the new South Waterfront neighborhood. The Percent for Art program also provides two-dimensional work to public places across the city, and all of you are recipients of pieces of that collection, and I hope you enjoy them. This year's significant outreach efforts resulted in culturally diverse works by artists new to the collection, including this piece by Kwa Franklin Gong, an immigrant from Cameroon. This image is of the Justice Center window, just across the street, Portland's first major architecturally integrated piece of art by Ed Carpenter. RAC takes seriously our maintenance role for the city's public collections. This 30-plus-year-old window finally sprang a leak, and we fixed it with help from the city and county. It was a major undertaking, but very necessary. And then murals are springing up all over the city, helping engage diverse populations and beautify neighborhoods. This mural by Addie Boswell and Antoine Thomas can be found in the Rosewood neighborhood in East Portland and clearly is beloved and celebrated by many. To summarize, RAC and the arts community are working together to transform the way we engage the citizens of Portland, all citizens of Portland. We are working to support the health of the arts community, remove access barriers, restore arts education, and build Portland's reputation as a vibrant, creative hub. Arts organizations are a major driver of the local economy. Their impact is $253.5 million a year.
What's that number again?
$253.5 million. It's a lot of jobs. Individual artists are, of course, critical to our success, and we're fortunate that so many young creatives and established artists alike choose to live and work in Portland. Suffice it to say, Portland would not be Portland without this arts and culture community that is diverse, resilient, and strong. Thank you for helping to make it so.
I'm so proud to be the chair of this amazing organization and to live in a city that has such a strong and vibrant arts community. As we have shown, the majority of your investment is finding its way into performing and visual arts facilities, classrooms, community centers, and neighborhoods throughout the city. On behalf of the staff and board of the Regional Arts and Culture Council, gracias. Thank you for your continued investment in culture, creativity, and the arts.
Thank you. Eloise, I have to just note in your outstanding year in review, you have a picture of one of the newest additions to the collection, which is the Corey Arnold photograph.
Uh-huh.
And this has caused quite a bit of tension between me and the mayor, because once upon a time, you let me cherry pick all the good art. And this somehow slipped through the cracks and is now in his office. And
well,
it's spectacular.
Well, you can visit it often.
Do we have other people presenting?
We do. So, and then should we come back after they're finished?
Yeah, if you
finished?
Can come back, okay. We'll have some Q&A.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your time.
Friday. I have people signed up. Are Eloise, did
you have
invited?
Go to the sign-up list now? Okay, if you could.
Okay, I have five people signed up. First four, please come on up, are Joe Walsh, Philip Liu, Jeff Harvey, and Andres Lopera.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Please state your name. Who wants to go first?
Me? Okay. I'm Jeff Harvey, President and CEO of Burgerville. And as well, I'm the honorary chair for the Work Free Art campaign this year. And I wanted to share a few points about Work for Art and arts, you know, investments in arts from a business perspective. About 5 years ago, Burgerville made the decision, I made the decision, to make Work for Art available as a contribution choice to all of our employees. We have an annual giving campaign where people like to participate. It was a bit of an experiment, but what happened subsequent to that surprised everybody in our company. Since that time, over 5 years, we've now given, our employees have given, over $105,000 in that time frame. You heard some numbers earlier, about 500 employees out of a work base of 1,200 employees give every year. That's not something we expected. And all I did was make it available. So I started talking to the employees about what caused this. And what I learned was, even though these are minimum wage jobs for the most part, and we try to give them a lot of really great and creative benefits, what I learned as I engaged our employees is that in many cases, what they do with Burgerville is part of a plan of theirs. They work multiple jobs. Having an hourly wage job actually helps them manage their time. And what they do with a lot of that time is actually perform in some way, shape, or form as an artist. So a great deal of our employee base is either a musician or a painter or a dancer, and this is actually how they choose to organize their life. And the giving to this program not only supports their passions, but it also gives them access to things like the arts card, which they now use to take all of their families and their children to these events and get great exposure. That led me to, obviously, some pretty deep inquiry from a business perspective. And since that time, 5 years ago, now we actually see some significant benefit to an investment in the arts as it relates to creating highly innovative, highly creative businesses, skills and practices that our employees brought to the job as part of their passions have now been integrated in how we develop people in Burgerville. So we do improv training for most of our employees on a regular basis. We've invested in programs like LiveWire radio program. LiveWire radio program team is actually part of our creative team, helping us to internally message important points to our employees. We'll soon start to do that externally. And what I've come to learn in the time frame since we've started this is that not only, you know, do I love the arts and love to participate, not only is it a morally and spiritually uplifting thing, but it's actually a very intelligent business strategy. It creates practices and skills of creativity and innovation in people who really love to perform to begin with. And our business has shown significant benefits as a result of that.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
And you make a mean strawberry milkshake, too. I mean, so can we say that?
Available fresh now, yeah. Thank you for that.
I was going to ask whether improv is more relevant to burgers or shakes.
more relevant to making relationships with guests. Any product applies.
But please state your name for the record.
Yes, hi. My name is Philip Liu. Thank you, council members. I'm testifying in regards to the huge importance that Arts for All has been played for my son and myself and for all the many people who couldn't afford it otherwise. The first time we used the Arts for All, my son and I went to the ballet to watch Stravinsky's Rites of Spring. He was 4 years old. After the show, I asked him if he liked it. And his words, he said, "That was beautiful." He asked if he could watch it again tomorrow. And we actually went, and it was sold out. But from then on, we went to as many shows as possible. One of our favorites is going to Buddy Vox performances. It's kid-friendly, funny, lighthearted, at times serious, and generally wonderful. We both think the performers are like superheroes. Sky goes to kids' classes in Buddy Vox. He's now 6.5 years old. I had a stroke 5 years ago. I couldn't speak for the first couple months, and the only word that I could say was yes, and half the time I meant no. And I had to relearn cat and dog. Then I went on to relearn arithmetic. Then a year later, paragraphs. Then reading for a few pages. Then trying to talk to people. In the many performances, like the Oregon Symphony, the Buddy Vox, the Northwest Children's Theater, and so on, I feel like my body and mind and body is healing from the stroke. My son receives the same results, mind, body, and heart healing. I am on fixed income. Without the Arts for All, we wouldn't be able to afford it. Thank you, Mayor Hale, who's not here, and thank you, council members, for investing in arts organizations that participates for Arts for All. Thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name.
All right, my name is Andres Lopera. So good morning, council members. I'm really, really pleased to be here and just to be able to publicly thank RAC for the fantastic job that they do with the arts organizations in Portland, Oregon. I'm a newcomer. I'm the new music director of the Metropolitan Youth Symphony. Mm-hmm. We are an organization that we impact the life of 450 students and geomusicians in the Portland area. It's fantastic, the job that I do. I feel so privileged to do it. Because there are students that have been there from just, we only require 1 year of experience, and they come through our organization for 6-7 years, and we have 13 ensembles, 450 students, and we have all the way from beginner to advanced jazz, band, and orchestras. It's a fantastic place to be, and we're really glad to be part of the Portland community. Access and inclusion are our core values in our organization, and all of these just help us to keep growing in the impact that we have in the culture in Portland, Oregon. So we have a really big, strong financial aid program. This financial aid program that is thanks to all this funding help us to not say to welcome every kid that comes to our organization, regardless of their financial background. We always make them possible to be in our organization in any of the groups that they can be performing with us. We have a big outreach wing in our organization. Only this year, we are performing 19 concerts in Warm Springs and North Portland. We impact the life of around 5,000 students. Only yesterday, I had the pleasure to be in the David Douglas School District where we were performing for 3 elementary schools. It's just been such a pleasure because I went to even the Beach School and the King School, and I had the opportunity to talk to them in Spanish, and they were just really glad to, you know, share the vision and passion for music in my own language. So it makes me feel a little bit more home. This leads me to our inclusion part. Thanks to RAC and their devotion for arts and culture, we got the funding to purchase advertisement in Univision to reach out to the Latino American community and involve them a little bit more with what we do. I'm from Medellin, Colombia. I've seen the transformational change that music can have in the communities. I'm so glad that we have been able to pursue this NYS. We do believe that music makes a change, and I'm really glad that you from the City Council and the RAC supports all of these initiatives, and that we are making a change in the music community and the arts community in Portland, Oregon. So thank you so much. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. And on this issue, I think I can also speak for the Progressive Party of Oregon. The arts to us is what makes us human. If you go through all of the arts. So we support all of the things that were said today. And I wish there were more citizens that didn't have a vested interest that would express their feelings when they go see a play or a musical or listen to anybody with talent. It always amazes me. I think I was on the wrong line when it came to singing and musical ability. But I know this, as an activist, the arts is what makes us human. And if you find any extra money someplace, this would be a good place to put it.
Thank you. Carla, do we have more people signed up?
Mr. Livingston, did you want to speak again? Or he's the last one who signed up.
I'm kind of a fill-in. For the Right Brain Initiative.
Actually, please state your name for the record.
Bruce Livingston with Playwright. I'm also on the governing committee of the Right Brain Initiative, and was asked to fill in today to talk a little bit about right brain science and the arts. We've all seen the bumper stickers that say art saves lives. At Playwright, we've believed that for 10 years, that what we do with kids really transforms their lives in positive ways. Everybody involved in creating art, I think, believes that. We know it's a messy process. The results aren't always beautiful, but they're always transformative, we think. But getting funding for that kind of thing is pretty difficult on the basis of anecdotal information. 2 years ago, three scientists from the University of Oregon and OHSU combined to design and execute a research project into the impacts of the workshops that we do at Playwright. The results have just, the research has just been finished. The results are being submitted for publication. They've given us a brief 4-page summary of those outcomes, and they, I think, are dramatic testimony to the impact of the arts in transforming human beings' lives. What they've found is that after participation, completion of one of our workshops, the kids who did it showed a number of things. Significant reduction in hyperactivity, improvement in mood and emotion symptoms, such as withdrawal, shame, anxiety, and depression. They showed reduced anhedonia, that's a funny psychological term for the inability to experience pleasure. They improve in that regard. And quite significantly, they improve their ability to regulate anger. Anger dysregulation gets much better. And those are all from observers of the kids. Playwright was not involved in any of this. It's all arm's length research. Interestingly enough, when the kids themselves were asked a month after the end of the workshop what changes they'd observed in themselves, over 70% of them said that their ability to control and regulate their impulses had improved dramatically. To me, those are really dramatic representations of how art contributes not only to the health of an individual, but also to the health of a community. I think that it is dramatic evidence that our community is a better place because of the creative arts and people's engagement in them. And I do have copies of this brief report if you'd like to see them. I'd be happy to share them with you.
Thank you very much. Carla, has anyone else signed up for that?
That's all who signed up.
Okay. Thank you. Eloise, do you want to come back up again? Do you have anything more to say before we move on to vote
much.
To accept the report?
Closing statement?
I'm still sort of reeling from those wonderful testimonies. I hope what you've seen and heard today give you at least a partial picture of all that has been going on under our roof the past year and under the roofs of all these amazing people that we work with and fund. It's an exciting time in the city. It's a challenging time in the city. And as I said before, I think the arts community is incredibly resilient and creative in how they've been able to move through this difficult period. And we're all celebrating at the same time that we're working hard to stay within our means. So we very much appreciate your support, your enthusiasm over the years, and we hope that we will continue on in very positive light for many years to come. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now it's our chance to say something back. So I move the adoption of the report.
Second.
Any council discussion? Carla, please call the roll.
Fish?
First of all, Eloise and Lena and all of your colleagues that are here today, staff, board members, supporters, artists, everyone who is part of this enterprise, thank you for joining us today and celebrating your accomplishments from 2012. And I'm sorry that former Mayor Adams is not here, because when we celebrate 2012, we're really talking about the work that he led in his last year in service. So I say a round of applause for Mayor Sam Adams for the work that he did. A couple of things struck me in the presentation. First, the great story on work for art and the fact that Burgerville and so many other companies are participating. I know every year you have an event where you announce who's the winner in each category. So it's a lot of competition goes on to see who can do the most in workplace giving. And what I want to put a plug in for Work for Art, because you've made it so easy that even I figured it out. And because it's embedded in your payroll. So you just sign up and it automatically is deducted, and at the end of the year you get a statement. And that's about as good as it gets. So congratulations, and congratulations for the friendly rivalry you've stimulated among businesses in Portland. You know, the arts tax was adopted last year by 62% of the voters. And it is my view that it is our task in the council to, A, get the legal proceeding resolved as quickly as possible, and we believe we're on very strong footing, and, B, make whatever changes are necessary consistent with the will of the voters, so that we can administer this tax in a fair and equitable way. And I will certainly say that that's my commitment to you, and I know that the uncertainty gives all of our friends heartburn. But I think in the long run, if we can work those two issues out in an expedited way, we'll all be better for it. This council was proud to refer the measure, a prior council was proud to refer the matter to the voters, and I was proud to support it. And so we will work together to address those challenges.
Thank you.
Someone mentioned the parallel effort going on in Salem, and we had to put a plug in for extending the cultural tax credit for the Oregon Cultural Trust. I know that tax expenditures are coming under a lot of scrutiny, but it is the case has been made there, too, and I think that needs to be extended, I'd say, for at least 20 years, but I'd settle for 10. One of the things that I get to do when we do this annual report is thank the folks that you've brought with you for how arts have enriched the community's life and my life in particular. And so I in particular want to shout out to Charles Froelich, who's here, for an amazing accomplishment this year with Rick Bartow being the first Native American artist to be featured on the Mall in Washington, D.C., which is an incredible accomplishment. to my friends Paul and Walter for White Bird, and on my birthday, I joined with thousands of people to watch Le Grand Continental. And I even got to see them dance, which I don't think I'd ever seen before. And that was an extraordinary event in Portland's living room. Eloise, I want to thank you in particular for the mountains you moved to place Lee Kelly's masterwork, Memory 99, at the future home of PNCA in the North Park blocks. I go out of my way every time I come to work to drive by it because it's so majestic, and I know that was hard, so thank you. I also want to acknowledge Victoria Fry and Pica because they do an event at the old Washington Monroe High School the last couple years, and this past year they projected a live film on the side of the building, and we had a picnic and watched live action, which was actually going on inside the building but was projected. And that was extraordinary, and I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge Chapin Fish, my son, who played the Oregonian publisher in something called The Portland Play, since you mentioned the Oregonian, and had a little bit of a spat with his sister in the play over women's suffrage. Maybe some things haven't changed about being behind the times. So thanks to everybody that has enriched our community, and I also... with great pride, just want to also announce that in August, for the first time, the Gay Men's Chorus will perform in a park of this city, and they will kick off the Washington Park Summer Festival. And I hope everybody who has a chance to come sees their first outdoor concert in one of our parks as the kickoff event of our most important series. On May 17th, we officially launched the newest park in our city, which is called The Fields. It has art already in it, which is snails. What are they made of?
Concrete.
Cultural.
I think they're cast concrete.
Cast concrete. And on May 17th, PNCA's poet laureate Barry Sanders has been commissioned to do an original work to acknowledge the significance of that field. And then next month, Mayor Hales and I will be hosting an art show at City Hall featuring young people through the program of PAIR. So PAIR artists will be on display. I can't tell you what it means to me as a citizen, separate and apart from an elected official, to live in a city that has such a vital place for arts and culture. And I am it enriches my life and my children's life and my family life every day. And RAC is at the forefront of making that happen and in organizing the public and the private. And so to you, Eloise, and Lena, the board, and the whole family that makes this go, congratulations for another stellar year, and I look forward to supporting you for many years to come. Aye.
Thank you very much.
Britt. Britts?
Well, I'll associate myself with the eloquent remarks of Commissioner Fish, and thank you, each and every one of you, for being here today. It is both jobs and culture that we're celebrating today, and the spirit of Portland in celebrating the arts, funding the arts, because although people who work in the arts love what they do, they also need to eat and send their kids to college. And so it's important to recognize that. Lena, thank you so much for your chairmanship of the board and for your work on equity and diversity, as well as Eloise, making significant strides. And we appreciate the partnership in that regard. Joe Walsh mentioned that he wished more people who are not vested would come to events like this. And in fact, we saw a lot of people come to a discussion we had last year on the appeal of the Portland Playhouse land use, and a phenomenal outpouring of all kinds of folks in the community recognizing that arts and culture build community, and that this is an essential part of who we are as Portlanders. So I appreciated hearing from our relatively newly come person from New York City about the culture here, and that it is a place where people can grow and thrive and choose to work at great businesses like Burgerville while pursuing their other dreams. And so it all comes together here in Portland. I used to have a vested interest in the arts in that my daughter was a theater major at Willamette University. She then volunteered for the Obama campaign last summer and is now looking at a career in political staff work rather than in arts and culture. But I am very glad that she majored in theater at Willamette, because I think it's a great preparation for life to be thinking in various ways and to learn how to perform and communicate. That's essentially what all the world's a stage, and we are merely players, and the more we learn how to do it well and encourage each other as we do it, the better. So thank you very much for your work. Aye.
Novick?
I first have to say that I will never again look at a towel in the same way. Thank you very much. I'm really happy to know that the next time I visit a Burgerville, I'll also be a patron of the arts. That had not occurred to me before. I hope that I will see many of you this summer at what, frankly, is my favorite Portland artistic event, although sadly it will be the last such event. This will be the last year of Trek in the Park, but this year they're doing The Trouble with Tribbles, which, of course, is one of the great all-time episodes. Thanks very, very much for all the work everybody has done and your testimony today, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Hales?
Good morning, everyone. I'm really sorry I wasn't able to be here for the presentation, but I had the privilege of welcoming His Holiness the Dalai Lama at the airport this morning to our city, and that was pretty wonderful in its own way, and I was honored to be there. I have really a story about three young people to add to this celebration this morning. One of them I just met at the airport, who was one of the security people for the State Department, and he's from New York, and I won't use his name because he's a security guy, but he's visiting Portland, of course, as part of this responsibility, and he's very excited about being in Portland, and he commented on, I'm really looking forward. This looks like a city with a great music scene and a great restaurant scene, and I'm just going to really get immersed in this city for a few days while I'm here on this important duty. And yet one more young person who's noticed that this is a great place, and on several levels, its livability, its quality of life, its art scene, its food scene. And so, we've already sold this guy on Portland, and he just got off the plane. And then the other two young people that I want to comment on are two of the most artistic members of our family, one of whom learned to dance in Portland and is now in Brooklyn, making her way in the world as a modern dancer, and the other is the stage manager at Milagro Theater. And those two young people are in our family, grew up in this city where the arts are part of life and part of education and part of what makes them want to be in Portland and stay in Portland and make a life here. And as a father, as well as someone who cares about the whole community, I love to see that experience in those young people and to hear those stories of how the arts are becoming real for them and in some cases becoming a career for them. So that's progress in my eye. We are a great city of the arts. RAC and its volunteer leadership and its staff and all of its partners in the amazing arts scene in Portland make us who we are. So thank you for all that you do. Look forward to much more. Thank you, and I vote aye. Thanks for coming, everyone. We have a couple of regular agenda items that remain and that I think might require postponement to this afternoon, right? They're all emergency ordinances.
Although there are four of us now.
Oh, there are four of us. No, I'm back. I thought if you were still here, we were having to move them. Now I'm here. Okay, I can count down. Let's take item number 413.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Portland State University for $55,000 to provide community engagement, survey, and analysis services.
I think we have someone here from the Police Bureau if there are any questions about this, but this is part of our Department of Justice compliance effort. Any questions? Here we go. Good morning.
Good morning. Greg Stewart from the Portland Police Bureau. I can answer any questions you have, or if you'd like, I can speak briefly about what we're engaging with.
Please do, yes.
Briefly, the proposed DOJ settlement has several community outreach requirements, primarily as a neighborhood-level survey. Up until 2007, the Police Bureau historically conducted a survey not at the neighborhood level but at a larger geographic unit. It paid about $60,000 for this survey. because several Portland State professors are willing to conduct most of the analysis free of charge, we're able to do a more extensive survey as well as two smaller surveys for $5,000 less than we've historically paid and meet our potential requirements from the DOJ. Additionally, and I think it's important to mention that we've been working on restoring this survey since we lost it in 2007. It was cut due to budget cuts. I think you cannot, it is very difficult to engage the community without a survey of this kind. We'll be able to do over surveys for areas where we'll have a larger minority presence. We'll be able to engage marginalized groups through the use of a stakeholder survey. And really, it's essential to community policing efforts. If you want to engage like broad segments of the community, a survey such as this is one of the most cost-effective means of doing so. I've got documents on costs, or if you have any questions about what the money will be spent, I can provide that.
Great questions.
I have a couple of questions. Which communities are the focus of the survey? Is it the general public, or is it communities of color, people with disabilities?
There's actually several components. Broadly speaking, there's a neighborhood level survey about community outreach and accountability that's written into the proposed settlement. So this will be more of a community-wide survey. However, the goal is to do an oversample and be able to capture members of the minority community that might otherwise be missed or might not be, you know, available in traditionally like police forums like neighborhood associations. The second component is a stakeholder survey, which we will be able to engage groups that are representative of marginalized communities, people with mental illness, different minority communities, immigrant communities, and again, hopefully via that survey, allow those communities to have a voice in community policing. The third piece, which is also in the DOJ agreement, is an internal survey of officers, which would be around their attitudes and acceptance towards the proposed settlement.
And which stakeholder groups will be advising PSU and the Police Bureau on this?
Well, the advisory board, when the settlement is proposed, if the settlement is accepted, will be advising them overall on the structure. The intergovernmental agreement itself is for up to 300 stakeholder groups as identified by the Police Bureau and the advisory board. So the particular stakeholders have not been identified because we need that input from the advisory board. One piece, and I know this might seem premature, but I think it's important to point out, the agreement itself has a 90 days. They want the survey conducted within 90 days of the formation of the advisory board. That's actually sort of a Herculean task, particularly considering we're going to have to reach out to a lot of groups who historically haven't had a lot of contact with the police. One of the reasons we're trying to begin this now is so that we can have a thoughtful, well-planned survey. And it's much more cost-effective to do it early, to start the planning early, have a successful survey and meet our requirements, than to wait till the last minute and try to rush and throw something together just to kind of check a box.
So that gets to my final question. It's obvious that we're doing this now so that we can get the paperwork done and get PSU on board. Are we going to wait for that figuring out of the stakeholders until the community advisory board is established?
I don't think that's possible. And we have been, and we spoke about this, we've been kind of working on this since 2011, before it was a requirement. This is something we wanted to do. Our plan is to get a methodology selected, identify a number of potential stakeholders, and identify or build the survey devices, present those to the COAB when it's selected, and then allow their feedback to make modifications to the process. If we wait till the last minute to identify all the particular groups, there might not be sufficient time.
So that is of concern to me, and perhaps we could talk in the Council's Coordinating Committee about the logistics of that, because I liked your answer on the COAB's going to be involved in figuring out who the targeted groups are, but it sounds like the methodology is going to be set before that, and really the targeted group should be part of discussing the methodology. So I'm glad that we're doing this today and setting the paperwork in motion. I hope to be involved with the Office of Equity and Human Rights, the Commission on Disability in figuring out with PSU and the Police Bureau exactly the steps, because you're right that the timeline is extremely challenging that is set up in the Department of Justice settlement.
Certainly, and if you would like, I know the professors involved and myself would be more than happy to meet with any interested groups and start soliciting input as soon as possible. We would really like to get moving on this so it can be done in a thoughtful, kind of holistic way.
We could set up a task force from the Council Coordinating Committee to help with that.
Wonderful. Thank you
very much.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the other thing that occurs to me is that you've got specific partners at Portland State, which is good, but there are other capabilities there, like their demographics. Jason Jurjevich's group that does the demographic research that I hope would be at least helping to inform how we reach out to those groups. They've done a good job of tracking the demographic changes that have happened in the city. So.
The partnership with PSU is something we're looking to build, and I think it's a partnership that PSU wants to build with us. And I think you're exactly right. We really leverage an incredible amount of analytic ability for the city by engaging them. And we also increase our transparency. Because those professors aren't going to rubber stamp. I mean, their personal reputations are at stake. So by engaging them, we increase both our ability to collect and analyze data as well as do so in a transparent manner.
Other questions? Thanks, Archie. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your time.
Anyone else wants to testify on this item?
No one. Oh, Mr. Walsh.
Come on up, please.
I wasn't going to, but I'm going. My name is Joe Walsh, again, representing Individuals for Justice by itself. I'm a little confused. Are you saying that you're going to authorize a survey on a settlement between the Department of Justice and the... What is a survey? I mean, why would you be doing a survey now? Is there anybody that can answer that? Why would you do a survey now when the judge is looking over that agreement, and that's going to crisscross over into this? So, I mean, why would you do it now? Why not wait until the judge makes a decision on what's going to happen with the Portland Police Department? You have multiple parties right now negotiating their positions. So why would you do a survey now? Why not wait until the decision is made and then do the survey and say, hey, guys, what do you think of this? Why do it now? That's my question. I was caught off guard on this, so I haven't done any research on it. But listening to it, I just went,
Joe, let me take a crack. The notes that we were given said that the baseline survey of public trust and confidence is mandated by the DOJ settlement. So this isn't what do you think of the terms of settlement. This is baseline data to be used later. And on a number of the pieces of the agreement that we believe we can move on now rather than just wait for the final agreement to be hammered out, things that are not contingent on the final agreement, what I think the council wants to do is move forward on those so we're not dragging our feet. And a baseline survey on public trust and confidence is not linked to the final terms of the agreement, because we're going out and surveying people about their attitudes. That's the reason. I mean, you may have a disagreement about timing, but it isn't putting the cart before the
horse. I just think you're going to confuse people, because most people understand that are paying attention to this issue, that it's in the courts, and the judge is looking at it, and he's asking for the interested parties to come up with some reasonable way of resolving this. It hasn't been resolved yet. So when you talk about doing a survey on a settlement that's not resolved, totally confused.
The settlement. It's about public attitudes involving trust and confidence in the police bureau. It has nothing to do with the terms of the settlement. We're not gauging public opinion.
But that settlement is going to impact what people think about the Portland Police and the Department of Justice. I'm just saying...
That the settlement, the survey is required in the settlement. So that was why I was asking the questions of the police
But the settlement's not final.
I know. So, but it takes a while to get contracts signed, sealed, and delivered. And so we need to, and because the timeline in the Department of Justice settlement is not currently being disputed, they want it done fast, and I think everybody wants it done fast. So in order to be able to be ready to go with the survey once the settlement is approved, we have to start thinking about it now.
And I'll just say one more thing, and then I'll leave it alone. When the settlement comes down between the police department and the Department of Justice and Judge okays it, that's going to change how people look at the settlement. So to test it now is not going to give you the real feeling of the people of Portland because they don't know what's going to happen.
Well, actually, about the settlement.
Actually, Mr. Walsh, that's kind of the point. I mean, the idea is to get a baseline idea of public trust and confidence in the police bureau in order to determine whether community engagement and changes in police policy and procedure lead to improvement or erosion of that public trust. The idea is we do the survey now to see how people feel about the police. Then, a while after the settlement has been implemented and changes in policy have been made over the next couple of years, then I think we would do another survey to see whether, as a result of the changes that have been made, public trust has improved.
Okay, that's where we have disagreement. I think this survey is going to be worthless as soon as the settlement comes down, because it'll change my mind how I look at the Portland Police Department, depending on what the judge says, depending on what the Department of Justice says, depending on what the police union says. It's going to change my mind. So if you surveyed me now, I would say, I don't like the Portland Police Department. I don't like it. But that could change if they were reasonable in the negotiations. And all of a sudden, I would say, okay, they're being reasonable. That changes my perception of the point. And that's all I'm saying to you. This survey will be worthless when the settlement comes down. So if you want to do another survey after that, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm finished. Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else? If not, roll call.
Fish?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
I appreciate the testimony because, indeed, it is very challenging to figure out the timing of each piece of the settlement agreement and not even knowing when the settlement is going to actually be agreed upon and ruled as final. So it's a good conversation to have. I do think it's appropriate to move forward with this now with the understanding that we do need to do some community engagement to decide the methodology in the survey as before it gets done, and that can't be rushed or should not be rushed. Thanks, Mayor, for your leadership on this. Aye.
Else.
Yeah, I appreciate the alternate view, Joe, but we're not waiting to start a number of things that the settlement includes because they're the right things to do. It's right to start training our officers to different rules for the use of force. It's right to start pairing mental health professionals with officers in vehicles in each of our three precincts, and it's right to do this. So, frankly, hope you don't mind the label, but everybody in this room is an insider. Including you, most people want to see changes in the practices of the Portland Police Bureau and in its understanding of the community, and that's what this will lead to. So there's no time like the present to start that. Aye. Thank you much. Okay, next item.
Item 414, authorized application to the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance for a grant in the amount of $9,900 for the fiscal year 13 Bulletproof Vest Partnership Body Armor Safety Initiative for Bulletproof Vest.
So this is a rather arcane item. Obviously, it's grant funded. Exactly how the safety initiative works, I have to confess, I don't know, but I hope it doesn't involve testing. So I'm being flippant about something that's important, but it's a small grant funding this safety initiative. So we can get more information about it from the Bureau if we need it. But
I'm happy to vote on it. These bulletproof vest purchases have come through with surprising regularity over the last four years.
Right.
And I'm wondering why vests have to be replaced every 5 years. And given the federal sequestration, if there isn't better use for federal taxpayer money. But
yeah, I suspect this is one of those grants that's only for this purpose and that's it.
Yeah, but I don't know why bulletproof vests wouldn't be life jackets that you could use them over.
I would think so too. Actually, unlike life jackets, you don't have to worry about whether the air leaks out. All right, we're being casual about something important, but it's also a minor line item in federal funding, which one of these days we'll get to re-examine. Anyone have any further?